हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
So this is the Babaji speaking. What was the question? Okay, the question is, the Vaishnava religion is the eternal religion. How should a person who has taken shelter of the Vaishnava religion act in relation to others? I wish to understand this very thoroughly. So after offering respects, oh, I see. No wonder we're not going down. I'm pushing the up button. Yeah, this is a new chapter. It says, I place upon my head these words of the saintly devotees. Although every soul is by nature a perfect servant of Lord Krishna, some souls, because of ignorance, of bewilderment, do not accept that they are his servants. They are one group. Other souls, however, do accept that they are his servants. They are another group. Thus, in this material world, the souls may be divided into two groups. One, they who turn away from Lord Krishna, and two, they who are eager to approach Lord Krishna. In the material world, most of the souls prefer to turn away from Lord Krishna. Many of these souls do not accept any religion. There is no need to say much about these persons. They have no idea what should and should not be done. For them, their own personal happiness is the be-all and end-all of their lives. Persons who accept religion have an idea of what should be done. So it's like, means those who are eager to approach Krishna, generally we see that they're accepting the eternal religion. And then those who are turning away, they may accept religion, may not. So in the turning away, they may accept some pious situation in which then they may prosper. But then they may also not. You know, it's not sure. But their happiness, that is basically what is their perfection. So some will choose to gain that through pious means, and some they don't bother with religion. Because religion means then you have to what should be done and what should not be done. Religion says that. So if one is simply wanting to be happy, then that means we establish our own what should be done and what should not be done based on what pleases us. Then religion means that there's a regulation on what should and should not be done because its purpose is elevation, not sense gratification. And then there are those who accept. So of those who accept, then he says, here's quoting from the devotee Mano has written in Sri Mano Samhita 692. The 10 features of religious life are patience, forgiveness, self-control, honesty, cleanliness, sense control, knowledge, wisdom, truthfulness, and freedom from anger. Among these six are features that benefit the performer. They are patience, self-control, cleanliness, sense control, knowledge, and wisdom. Remaining four are for the benefit of others. They are patience, honest, truthfulness, and freedom from anger.
Patience is repeated on both sides.
Yeah, yes. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay. It's probably supposed to be forgiveness. Because forgiveness is not mentioned here. Patience is there. And forgiveness, self-control. Self-control. Then honesty goes with this via others. Then cleanliness is for yourself. Sense control is for ourself. Knowledge is for ourself. And wisdom. Then truthfulness and freedom from anger. So then it's forgiveness. It should be forgiveness, honesty, truthfulness, and freedom from anger. Because you're forgiving others. You don't become angry with them, you forgive them. You're honest, you're truthful. Honest means you're straightforward. Truthful means you speak according to the scriptures. Okay, then he continues. Devotional service to Lord Hari is not clearly mentioned in this list of 10 features. These 10 features of religious life are taught here for the benefit of ordinary people. It cannot be said that by faithfully following the teaching of this verse, one will attain perfect auspiciousness. For Sri Vishnu Dharmotra Purana explains, to live for 5 days as the devotee of Lord Vishnu is far better than to live for 1,000 kalpas as a person who has no devotion for Lord Keshava. So that's Vishnu Dharmotra. And then from Bhagavatam, they who are not devotees of Lord Krishna cannot be said even to be human beings. They who are not devotees are all counted as animals walking on two legs. It is said, Okay, those two are Vishnu Dharmotra. Then Bhagavatam. Men who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses praise those men who never listen to the transcendental pastimes of Lord Shri Krishna, the deliverer from evils. Here the question is not what these persons should or should not do. The question is only, how should persons who have taken shelter of the path of devotional service act in relation to these persons? Of that I will speak. They who have taken shelter of the path of devotional service may be divided into three groups: Kanista, neophyte; Madhyama, intermediate; and Uttama, advanced. Although he has taken shelter of the path of devotional service, a neophyte is not yet a true devotee. He is described in these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.47. A Prakriti or materialistic devotee does not purposely study the Shastra and try to understand the actual standard of pure devotional service. Consequently, he does not show proper respect to advanced devotees. He may, however, follow the regulator principles learned from his spiritual master or from his family who worships the deity. He is to be considered on the material platform, although he is trying to advance in devotional service. He is to be considered on the material platform, although he is trying to advance in devotional service. Such a person is a bhakta praya, neophyte devotee, or bhakta vas, for he is a little enlightened by Vaishnava philosophy. Thus, one who faithfully worships the deity of the Lord but does not faithfully worship the Lord's devotees is a materialistic devotee, prakriti bhakta. The conclusion then is that faith is the seed of devotional service. To faithfully worship the deity of the Lord is to engage in devotional service. Still, if one does not also worship the Lord's devotees, his worship is not pure. And it's not pure devotional service. His worship is not devotional service in its complete form. His worship is merely stepping into the entrance of the house of devotional service. Interesting here, because sometimes this pure devotional service is defined in, how do you say, is that, you know, being pure in one's motive to serve Krishna. Not being, you know, trying to avoid the offenses or like that. But here, the interesting point is that it's making that if one is performing devotional activities, then it's considered as devotional. He's engaging in devotional service. If he has faith, then he's worshipping the deity. But if he doesn't worship the devotees, then his worship is not considered pure. So a pure devotee can only be one who respects devotees. So technically also, as we see, the Madhyama is one who respects devotees. And Prabhupada would always recommend that one come to that Madhyama platform where he is fixed in his devotional service, he respects the devotees. So this is an interesting way to define pure. That. Also he mentions that they're not interested to really seriously study the scriptures. You know, they read something, but they're not really seriously wanting to advance. So they're not respecting devotees so much, or taking advantage of the association. And they're not seriously studying the scriptures. Their worship may be worshipping the deity. So, and following some regulations that they've learned, you know, from the spiritual master or from their family who is worshipping the deity. But the, how do you say? But because devotional service means the Lord and his devotees, and devotion, relationship to Krishna means we say I'm a devotee of Krishna, but then how if one seriously asks, well, what is our identity as servant of Krishna? What does that mean, I'm servant of Krishna? It means servant means you have to be rendering service, and then what kind of service are you rendering? How do you render service to Krishna? Because Krishna doesn't accept service that is not coming through the devotees. Means we may directly render some service to Krishna, but that service has to become through the authority of the devotees. And if that authority is not there, then Krishna is not really seriously going to accept that. If you're sincere, you don't know these things, and you've performed some service wanting to please the Lord, but you don't know about really this, you know, the details of devotional service, and Krishna, seeing that sincerity, will put us in contact with the devotees. Then taking up that association of devotees and respect for devotees, then that service then takes on a pure mode. Then we can say, yes, we are servants of the Lord because we're servants of the devotees. So if we don't accept the devotees, then the devotional service hasn't been fully understood in its complete form. Only in its complete form, then So he says it's like merely stepping into the entrance of the house. You can come to the entrance, but then in the house and what activities go in the house, that's something else. Someone's in the house, but just at the door. So the door, there's not much interaction. Everything's happening inside the house. You know, at the door there's preaching, you know, but that's facing outside. You know, but if you're standing at the door and looking inside, then not much is happening. Isn't it? It means somebody comes to your door, then you go to the door, but you're facing outwards, and they're outside, and then you invite them in, but you don't invite them in just to the door, right? They come all the way in. So if they just stand at the door, there's not a whole lot that can happen. Maybe they can take their shoes on and off many times, or hang up their coat and put it back on, or open and close your umbrella, but I mean, there's not really something serious going on in ways of what goes on in the house. In other words, the activities you can do at the door are still the activities of outside. You know, it's the activities of divesting oneself of the outside activities. You take off the coats and the boots and everything that was necessary for outside, but that itself is not the service of inside the house. Therefore, the process of sadhana bhakti purifies us of what's the contamination of this material world. Like that. But the aspects of association with the devotees then gives rise to hearing and chanting about the Lord, worshipping the deity, staying in the residence of the Lord in a proper form, in a complete form. Then you can say then you're performing the activities of the house of bhakti. Otherwise, it's not. The scripture Srimad Bhagavatam 10.84.13 explain, the human being who identifies this body, made of three elements, with the self, who considers the byproducts of the body to be his kinsmen, who considers the land of birth as worshipable, and who goes to the place of pilgrimage simply to take bath, rather than meet men of transcendental knowledge there, is to be considered as an ass or a cow. The meaning is this. Although in the beginning devotional service consists of worship of the deity and nothing else, and although dry, materialistic logic is not recommended. Oh, I see. The meaning is this. Although in the beginning devotional service consists of deity worship and nothing else, and although dry, materialistic knowledge, logic is not recommended, for it crushes the heart into powder, it is nevertheless necessary that one understand that the deity of the Lord and service to the deity are pure and spiritual. All living entities in the material world are spiritual by nature. Among these living entities, they who are devotees of Lord Krishna especially manifest their pure and spiritual nature. The devotee and Lord Krishna are two different pure and spiritual entities. To understand their true spiritual natures, one must understand the relationships between the material world, the individual soul, and Lord Krishna. A person who understands these relationships and simultaneously worships the deity of Lord Krishna and serves the Lord's devotee acts rightly. So this would be proper religious, means sad-dharma, or the eternal religious principles. Is that you have sambandha-gyan, you're worshipping the Lord, and you are serving the devotees. When these three are intact, then we find then the eternal religion then is functioning in its proper form. When one faithfully worships the spiritual truth in this way, it is said that he has faith in the scriptures. Yeah, because the scriptures is talking about serving the deity and serving the devotees. And it talks about all this knowledge, the sambandha-gyan.
Could we rightly say that this gives like a sambandha-vidaya prayojana for the sambandha-tattva? Then you have avideya, which is service to the devotees. Of course, the two continue into the prayojana of the guest, where service to the Lord really starts.
Yeah, his deity would be, Krishna would be the goal. Yeah, from one side it would be that. You could also take another side is that one who, because Krishna is the Lord of some sundering existence, because everything is based on him. Therefore, then, one who worships, has this understanding and worships the deity is properly situated in that. And then the devotees, then Balaram is the Lord of the Sambit. So then he's the Lord that in the mood of devotee. So then that would also be there. And then you would have to have, you would probably then have the goal would be to properly render service. To please the Lord. When one faithfully worships the spiritual truth in this way, it is said that he has faith in the scriptures. A person who worships the deity of the Lord but does not understand the relationships that exist between the various spiritual entities has only a materialistic kind of faith. Although he stands at the entrance of the house of devotional service, his service is not pure devotional service. That is the conclusion. Person thus standing at the entrance of the house of devotional service is described in these words of the scriptures. Yeah, one would have to have a materialistic kind of faith, because then one's worshipping the deity but not seeing the devotees. That means then we're not really wanting to know the Lord. We may say we want to know the Lord, but which Lord do we want to know? Paramatma, we can say, okay, maybe he doesn't seem to be surrounded by devotees. But that's not the Bhagavan feature. Even though he is surrounded by devotees, it's generally we don't see. But Krishna, he is known because of being surrounded by loving devotees. That is the thing. He is so many, millions and millions of devotees.
Sarananda, Nandananda,
yeah.
Gopijanavala.
Yeah. Yeah. Means if we're worshipping but without understanding this relationships, then we're basically we're worshipping because it's God. You know, but God, Ishwara, like this, these are secondary. And primary names then are all in relationship to the devotees. So if one doesn't distinguish these things, then naturally one would be approaching for artha, artharthi, or jigyasu, you know, which is material.
Brother Maharishi often says in his lectures that until we fix ourselves up as a servant of the servant of the devotees in the world, without that service moved towards the devotees, then it's needed to develop humility needed to face the world. Is that somehow connected, yes?
I didn't quite catch what was their point.
That in reference there to by serving the devotees, one comes in a platform, pure service.
Right.
And it's when
But Radhanatha Maharaj was saying?
That by serving the devotees, only by serving the devotees, one develops humility.
Oh, only by serving, one develops humility.
And that's what this is the Lord.
Yeah. Well, humility is gained when there's actual knowledge. See, if there's only partial knowledge, then one thinks one knows a lot, one becomes very proud of his knowledge. But the real knowledge, then one understands one's relationship to the Lord, so you become humble. Like that. So that's an important element. Yeah, and so in association with devotees, one can gain their service attitude, and by serving the devotees, then the Krishna is pleased.
Can't fake it with the devotees.
No, it means you can try, but you can't fake the Lord. That's the thing. Yeah. And also, serious devotees, it's very difficult to. So he's basically making the point that he stands at the entrance of the house of devotional service, but it's not pure devotional service. So then, in the scriptures it mentions, a person who has accepted a Vaishnava initiation and who devoutly worships Lord Vishnu is said to be wise by a Vaishnava. All others are not Vaishnavas. Persons born in families who generation after generation are initiated by their family priest in the chanting of Vishnu mantras, and who thus worship the deity of the Lord with materialistic faith are neophyte, kanishka, or materialistic devotees. They are not pure devotees. Over them the shadow of devotional service is strongly cast. However, the reflection of devotional service is not manifest in them. For the reflection of devotional service is counted among the offenses. Therefore, they who possess this reflection are not Vaishnavas. However, from the shadow of devotional service may come a great good fortune. For such a neophyte devotee may gradually become an intermediate madhyaman and eventually an advanced uttam devotee. Problem here, sometimes in the translations, you know, they don't choose the right word, you don't catch it. And they don't give the Sanskrit, so you can't. Because here he's going between reflection and shadow, so this must be something to do with the abhas.
Abhas and patibimba.
Oh, patibimba, okay.
So, what I'm getting here is that those who are these caste lines, they're doing abhas because they're doing the Vishnu puja and chanting mantras, but it's not pure.
Mm.
but by doing it over a long time, they may get a chance
to take up pure.
Take up pure.
Okay. And the, but he doesn't explain that. He just says the reflections isn't there. So pratibimba is a reflection. That's like impersonalists or something who worship their ideas in personal liberation. Like okay. Yeah. So he says that's not there. The reflection is not manifest in them. Okay. Oh, I see. Means that the shadow is strongly cast. Means it's very much nama bas. It's not coming towards the pure side. But it's not pratibimba, it's not impersonal. But from that they may gradually become. Okay.
How is that considered reflection in question?
No, the impersonalists, what they do is it's like a reflection. They're not actually having any substance. See, a shadow at least is something. It's connected with the real thing. A reflection is just you're showing the things that the Vaishnavas do, but you're not actually performing them. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. It means there's a difference between the shadow and the reflection. However that may be, persons at the stage of spiritual advancement are not yet... Oh. However that may be, persons at that stage of spiritual advancement are not yet pure devotees. They may worship the deity of the Lord with material faith, and they may manifest the 10 signs of piety in dealing with ordinary persons. Still, the scriptures, descriptions of devotees' ways are not meant to describe them. To convert non-devotees into devotees is not in their power. The ways of the intermediate Madhyama devotee are described in these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.46. An intermediate second-class devotee shows love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is friendly to all devotees, and is very merciful to neophytes and ignorant people. The intermediate devotee neglects those who are envious of devotional service. The behavior described in this verse is the behavior of one who follows the eternal religion. Temporary or material activities are not described here. In a Vaishnava's life, such behavior must be followed. Other kinds of behavior, as long as they do not contradict this behavior, may be adopted when necessary. So we see interesting here is that, you know, what's important in this is that one could take these in a few different ways. One is that we are performing our service, but we may have these qualities that are talked about, and so then we take this and then we be contemplative, and then we try to correct our lifestyle. We try to give up what's unfavorable and see what is favorable and accept that. That would be one. Another is that we might find that we're not on, you know, that we have some qualities here that are not recommended, but then we try to establish that that's perfectly fine. That's perfectly natural. You know, how you can say someone's not advanced, or how you can say they're neophyte or prakriti. You know, I mean, just a sentimental consideration based on prestige. Or one could say that, okay, one is situated, you know, better than that. Here are the Madhyama qualities. And one could become proud of these things. Others are less. Others are nonsense, materialistic, you know, this kind of thing. So all these things should be, I mean, seeing the position becoming humble, or seeing the position and be, yeah, seeing oneself as by the grace of the spiritual master these things have happened. These are proper. But to either consider that your position in the third class stage is perfectly fine and normal and anything else is fanatic, or that your situation in the Madhyama platform, then one is better than others, then both of these these mentalities one has to be careful to avoid. So that's why so much detailed description is there, so one can find where one is. One can find if one is moving or advancing or what's the position. Like that. So that's what it's for. It's not to criticize, but it's to point out what's wrong. Like that. What's wrong and what's right.
The Maya body who does this fucking member bhakti, does he get any benefit that it could become bhakti abhas or just...
The only benefit is maybe he'd come in contact with the devotees who might then show him the correct path. That is the secondary path in jnana, where bhakti could be had because you always discuss philosophy, so then one might come in contact. Mm. One might come in contact.
He's not even as fortunate as the example of Haridas Thakura, where the, you know, the Muslim hunters being killed by the boar and he's saying haram, haram. Because the Muslim hunters chant him without offense. Yeah, so yeah. He gets the benefit of that. But this Mayavadi sannyasi doesn't get any benefit because he has a wrong attitude.
Yeah.
An offensive mentality.
But it said, even if he doesn't become sincere, then previously it was mentioned that someone who comes to the, approaches the liberated platform, they will get a chance to come in contact with the devotees. Mm-hmm. So at that point they may take it or they may criticize. They criticize, then they're finished. Mm-hmm. They take it, then they can transfer from, they can go beyond the liberated platform to the devotional platform. Mm. You know, that was basically the position we see of Vaishnava Das. You know, he was very well situated in the impersonal understanding. But then, by Krishna's mercy, he sent a devotee just to go by, walk by, that's all. He just came in contact. He didn't speak to him, anything. But the contact was enough that he was able to appreciate that something was there, a taste of something beyond what he was getting in his impersonal. So then he understood that there's something spiritual beyond the impersonal platform.
That's a very nice thing.
Hmm. Yeah. Like that.
Yeah. And Prabhupada says that chanting should not be heard from the lips of non-devotees. The non-devotee means impersonalists or...
Yeah, it means those who are against, but it means if you want to advance nicely, it means in devotional service, then you have to hear from the pure devotees. If you hear from the non-devotees, then basically depending upon who it is, if it's impersonal, then that's one should avoid that, because then that's like milk touched by the lips of the serpent. But for others, you know, you're standing in the street with your group of punk friends and they see some Hare Krishnas and one of the punk guys goes, "Eh, Hare Krishna," then he gets benefit and all his punk friends get benefit. Because they're not impersonalists, but at the same time as they're in ignorance. So they get some benefit. So this adds to their bhakti sukriti. Enough of that gets added up, then they will take up the association of devotees. They'll get faith in the process and take up the association of devotees. Then they'll be situated in devotional service. So enough of that then creates bhakti, when situated in bhakti. Because here it's mentioned that one is situated on the devotional platform, studying the scriptures in the association of devotees. So worshipping the deity means bhajana kriya, in the association of devotees with the proper understanding and faith, right? That proper knowledge. So that means when these first three are in position, then you can say that they are properly following devotees. Someone can say, "I'm on bhajana kriya, I'm initiated," but if he doesn't respect devotees, then it means the platform is weak, because bhajana kriya is standing on association of devotees. So if one doesn't associate, doesn't respect, how one can say that one's gone from faith to bhajana kriya without the devotees? Because it's not an arbitrary order. This is the standard order. You know, so then one can't say one is completely following the process nicely and well situated. So respect for the devotees has to be there, otherwise respect association, otherwise how that faith will then mature to the next stage, right? It means faith is there by bhakti sukriti, which is gained from the mercy of the devotees. Then that bhakti sukriti then matures where one takes up the association of devotees, so you learn about devotional service. Then you take up devotional service in the association of those devotees. So now if you're going to that one, you drop the worship or respect of the devotees, then there's every chance that maybe also faith will be dropped. Because you see, why do they drop devotees? Because their faith is not strong. Right? This one's fallen down, that one, you know, did this wrong to me or that wrong to me. So that means faith is weak. So association of devotees is not there. Without those two, how can one say one's situated in Bhajan Kriya? So one has to be careful of that. Here specifically then is mentioning that the persons are just, they're performing worship and all that because it's the tradition in their family or like this, they have interest in all that. They worship the Lord or they worship the Lord, they turn to the Lord for their material needs. So their faith in devotees isn't very strong. So they're worshipping the deities. You know, they're situated. They've learned something from the devotees. But because they don't respect and associate with them, then it's not complete, it's not strong. So neither do they have the association and neither do they have the knowledge. So it's not very strong. One may say, well, what if you have the knowledge and not the association? So that's a little better. But if you really have understand samandhagyan, There's the aspect of sambandha gyan on freeing yourself from the material world. It means God is God, you know, we're servant. Material energy is to be used in God's service, not our service. So that takes care of freeing ourselves from the material contamination. But then to get to the transcendental platform of rasa with Krishna, then one has to accept the devotees on that side. In accepting those devotees, then one can progress. So it's, devotees are very essential. So the knowledge is not going to be enough. Because if you don't accept the devotees here, how will you accept there? One may say, yes, I don't accept anyone here, I only accept the nitya siddhas. But somehow or another, the nitya siddhas accept the devotees here. So then if you accept them, then you accept their mood. That's the important thing, is a particular realm in the spiritual world is judged by the mood of the devotees that's there. Vaikuntha is known as Vaikuntha because of the mood of the devotees. And reciprocating with that mood, then Krishna takes the mood of the Lord. The mood of the devotees in Vrindavan is based on their pure, unalloyed affection. So because of that, then Krishna manifests the mood of Braja Krishna. It's not that Krishna is going to be there all alone with no devotees. He only manifests a mood depending upon which devotee does. One can say, no, he's always Krishna. But Krishna is an ocean of rasa, unlimited forms of reciprocation. So when you say Krishna, what do you mean? Right? The all-attractive one. That means he is attracting the devotees. Can you attract a stone? No. Can you attract someone who's not interested? No. So you attract someone who is interested. It means they're interested to be attracted. Therefore, Krishna can act in a way to attract. So this idea of God just on his own without devotees is actually not pure because it's not personal enough. You accept that God is a person, but which aspect of God's person? It's unlimited. So you have to take something. If you take yes, it's just the unlimited, then you're dealing in secondary interaction. Primary means God and his devotee. Then it becomes primary. Then it becomes special. So then, depending upon the devotee, then Krishna will manifest that mood. So without devotees, the whole process doesn't function, you know? It just doesn't. In the beginning, yes, you get under the path, you get to the door. But to go inside, then one has to accept the devotees. That makes sense. A Vaishnava relates to four kinds of persons. One, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Two, the devotees who are surrendered to the Lord. Three, innocent persons. And four, they who are enemies of devotional service. To these four kinds of persons, a Vaishnava shows love, friendship, mercy, and neglect. To the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he shows love. To the devotee, he shows friendship. To the innocent people in general, he shows mercy. And to persons filled with hate, he shows neglect. First, he shows love to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The master of all, he shows love, prema. The word prema means pure devotional service. The characteristics of pure devotional service are described in these words, Sri Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. This is called pure devotional service, yes.
Good. What would be the difference between showing love to the Supreme Lord, showing friendship to the devotees, and the devotees are so important for what means?
I'm not sure how he's going to develop this. Because here he's just saying, first he shows love to the Supreme Lord. But here he's establishing, because, how you say, service has to be based on a goal that you're trying to obtain. So then that would be necessary as a goal. Like Krishna's Gopi Janavallabha means that he is the goal of their life. The dearmost. So that's dearmost means then becomes one's necessity, one's importance.
It's because he is not in Tama yet. Then he shall love for the devotees.
So here he's describing the Madhyama. Yeah, so I'm not sure. We'd have to let us see how it develops here. These words describe the devotional service of an intermediate Madhyama Vaishnava. That's interesting. And this is Anyabhilashita Sunyam. Right? One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord favorably without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. So then, this is pure, this is not pure unalloyed, this is pure. So this is describing the intermediate. So the intermediate then is considered on the pure platform.
This is the verse using to define the Madhya Madhika.
Yeah. Like that.
It's interesting that Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu begins
to show that.
Because the Madhyama means that he's situated properly in these things. His faith is steady, his association with devotees is steady, and his bhajan, you know, worship of the Lord, and his other activities of sadhana are steady. Like that. That makes the Madhyama. If he's doing those things where it's unsteady, it'll be unsteady because of his material desire, material needs. So therefore it won't be pure. But when it becomes steady, it means then the need is Krishna. So therefore maybe that's why it says, you know, first is rendering service to Krishna. While for the neophyte, Krishna may not be the first. You know, paying the bills is the first, or his family, or his child, or his parakeet, or... you know, something else is first. Protection, safety, money, you know, something else is there. And Krishna is part of it, but he's not first.
He's the one who supplies all that.
Yeah, he's the one who supplies all that. But it's kind of, you know, that's... once he's supplied, then, you know, you don't need to deal with him until you need... it runs out. You know? So therefore it's not steady. Because there it says... one should render loving service to the Supreme Lord, so that would be your bhajan, favorably, is how Krishna likes it, not how we like it. So that would mean, that would have to be nishkam, not sakam. Mm-hmm. And without desire for material profit or gain, through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. So fruitive activities, then the profit you want there, then will be, you know, tangible in the way of material paraphernalia and, you know, situations, distinction, adoration, profit, these things. And just in the philosophical speculation, that the subtle aspects of this would be there, and the gain of impersonal liberation, which is also material. You're dealing with something spiritual, but your situation in it is not considered spiritual.
The interest is materialism.
Yeah. It's just negative materialism. You just want to get rid of it. But the focus is on... It's not positive. You know, it's like positive is, you know, we're good because that's bad. That's just negative. It's not actual positive. You know, something's good because it's good. That's, it doesn't, the other thing's good or bad doesn't matter, but this thing is good. So Krishna is good. It's not that he's good because the material world is bad. That's the impersonal concept. The spiritual, the Brahman's good because the material world is bad. And Krishna is good on his own. But that's also a transcendental, you can see the position, the transcendental position.
Yeah, that Anukulena Krishnanu Shilanam. It's an important point, and I've thought about it before, but now, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur was stating it in your reading, I'm thinking of another application of that favorable devotional service in a way which is pleasing to Krishna, because we have so many of our own desires and we want to purify it by offering it to Krishna, and it's sanctioned, it's purified, and then we can enjoy ourselves, whether it's food or music or dress or whatever we do. We have our own likes and then we want to offer that to Krishna. But offering service to Krishna according to his likes is an important part. It's an essential part of bhakti. Understanding what is Krishna like to eat, let me offer that. What music would he like to hear, let me sing that. Or let me play that. What association would he like me to keep, let me do that. How would he like me to dress? And it changes the perspective of devotional service. It changes the color.
Yeah. The Jagannanda Pandit makes a point, is that where we take the things that we are interested in and then apply that in devotional service is dovetailing, but that's that process called aropya bhakti. And so then in other words, aropya means to you take one thing and overlay it on another. Project, you know, like you project. You project something onto it. So you project your likes onto something and then offer that to Krishna. So devotional service is there, but you project your likes onto it. So that's called aropya. So in the beginning, that is used. It means whatever you feel is good. It means the whole idea is the best should be offered to Krishna. Of course, the best should be according to Krishna's taste. But even if one is not sensitive to that, that you're offering what you consider best to Krishna. Like that. So then that's aropya. So, but that can bring you to siddhi, aropya siddhi. So the perfection of that was, you will then understand, well, what does Krishna like? And then offer that. So that'll be the natural stage. So that seems to be also an aspect of the neophyte. This aropya bhakti is very prominent for them. While here, then they're offering favorably means favorably doesn't mean that it's pious. Favorably means that it's devotional. And that devotional is for Krishna's pleasure. Like that. So offering nonsense to Krishna then is not so, is not a valid process. Taking things that are offerable, that's a second, next step. But taking things that of what's offerable that Krishna likes, then that's the best. In other words, offerable means you have two definitions of it. I mean, the two come to my mind is one is what Krishna likes, and the second is what's not sinful.
Mm-hmm.
Means what's sinful is not to be offered. Like that. But that doesn't necessarily mean because it's not sinful, then it's what Krishna likes. You know? Does that make sense? You know, yeah, like that. Like you take a mushroom. A mushroom technically is not, you know, sinful. But at the same time, Krishna has zero interest in them. So they're unofferable to Krishna. You know? So it's just like, or let's say a durian. Isn't that durian? It's kind of like a jackfruit that's got all these big, huge spikes on it.
Sticky smell.
It looks like, it looks this round with all these spikes and a big, you know, thing coming out of it, like on a banana tree. So it kind of looks like a club. And it's supposed to be very sweet and kind of tastes like jackfruit, but it smells like a sewer. I mean, no exaggeration. I mean, it's from a great distance to the point that it's illegal to bring it in onto any airplane or take it into any hotel. You can get fined if you bring a durian into those places because the smell is so bad that other people will complain. But they say if you can get past the smell, it's great, you know. But, you know, pigs also have a similar concept on foodstuffs. You know, so the thing is technically it's not sinful because it is a fruit, but it's a kind of fruit that's in the mode of ignorance, so Krishna would not be pleased. Yeah, he would not be impressed with it, yes.
Which is Aropya Bhakti, Sakam Bhakti, or...
Aropya is Sakam, yeah. Aropya is just... means you have so many definitions of these basically same thing, but they're taking it from a slightly different angle to bring out a different point. So Sakam, simply you're pointing out that it's your desire. You know? Like that. Aropya means that you're laying your desires over onto the devotional. You know, it's like an overlay or something. You know, it's like you have one picture and you put another picture on with a transparency on top. It changes it something. Like that.
Yeah, I was thinking that if you have... is Sakam a question of mood? For example, say Aropya Bhakti. You may not do it for to gain something, but you may do it because that's the best thing you can do to serve the Lord. Is that still Sakam? Or?
No, if your whole purpose is to serve the Lord, then you take whatever you have and use that for Krishna. It's simply the mood. It's not so much what you're offering. It's the mood in which it's offered. Like this. And also then here, this Babaji is bringing out very much the mood that if you're not accepting, major thing that tells the difference is if you're accepting, means he's already taken the point if you accept the Lord or not as supreme, as your worshipable deity. So he's already taken that, non-devotees has already thrown that out. So now he's within devotees. Then those who accept the service and respect of the Vaishnavas and those that don't take that so seriously. Like that. Because you can't really be situated on the path without being serving and, you know, appreciating Vaishnavas. Therefore, then we see the neophyte is not seen in a great light because he's not really well situated on the devotional path simply because of this. It's not a matter of how much they understand or not, because his essence is serving the Lord in the association of devotees, you know, for the Lord's pleasure, assisting those devotees. So you don't have to be a great scholar. It's not that. Prabhupada points out the gopis were not great scholars. They simply loved Krishna. Like that. Mother Yashoda doesn't present herself as a great scholar. Like that. You know, but we can see she can do it if she wants. She has a whole discussion with Lord Chaitanya when he's sitting on the pots out in the back of the garbage. And he just says, it's all dirt, what's the problem? You know, she makes a differentiation. She analytically goes through it, but in a simple way that a child can understand. And in this way, then she defeats Lord Chaitanya. So she can, but it's not, it's, you know, if it's not there in her child, then she's not, there's no need to present those things. She just serves her child. So to make her child behave properly, she may use that as a technique. You know, just like we see also there, after the Trinavarta demons. And the gopis gathered up Krishna and brought him. And then they performed all kinds of mudras and nyasas on Krishna. So then Prabhupada said, you know, previously this is all common knowledge for the householder. They all knew how to do all these things. Now you have to go to some big, you know, ritualistic pundit to find out. But before that was common knowledge. The ladies of the house knew how to do those things to protect the children and these kind of things. You know, so they know these things, but for them it's secondary. The karma and the jnana is secondary. If it's useful in devotional service, then they use it. If it's not, there's no interest. You want to say something? Oh, okay. These words describe the devotional service of an intermediate madhyama, Vaishnava. Service that reaches up to the stages of ecstasy, bhava, and pure love, prema. By itself, without the addition of the qualities described here, worship of the deity of the Lord with faith is the activity of a neophyte devotee. This means that a neophyte devotee does not have the qualities of pure devotional service, which are, one, being without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation, and two, rendering transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably. However, on the day that these qualities are manifested in his heart, such a person may be called an intermediate madhyama devotee. That is how a materialistic devotee becomes an intermediate devotee. As long as these qualities do not arise in his heart, he is a materialistic devotee. This means that he is considered only a shadow of a true devotee or a shadow of a true Vaishnava. So we see also, as Prabhupada says, advanced devotional service begins with madhyama. So, and here at the beginning he says this service, the Vaishnava, reaches up to the stages of bhava and prema. So by this, then we can see that the closeness or the comparison between the madhyama and the uttama is very close, but between the madhyama and the kanista is very far. So like we tend to put kanista, madhyama, uttam, you know, just equally placed. But actually between the kanista and the madhyama there's a big gap. And then between the madhyama and the uttama, then it's very small. Because it's on the same platform, though it's not mature. The madhyama means that he is now seriously on the devotional path. While for the kanista, he's on the path, but because of his desires for gain, profit and gain through fruitive activities, or karma and jnana, and the service he renders to the Lord is not necessarily favorable to the Lord, because he doesn't accept the devotees, then it's a problem.
Would you say that kanista is practicing mixed devotion service, then the madhyama will be pure devotion service, and uttama will be the pure unalloyed devotion service?
Well, it's pure unalloyed starts at prema. And that's where one's. But also bhava is uttama.
Beginning of prema.
Yeah, yeah, it's called rati. It means there's 10 stages of prema. So the first is rati, which is bhava, and the last is mahabhava. So rati, it's a bud, like it's a flower, so it's a bud. So it doesn't have the form and the beauty and the smell, you know, the full manifestation of all the different colors and all that and form, you know, like that. But it is the bud of prema, like that. While the madhyamas means he's situated on, be like this, because he connects the three, the madhyama, bhakta, the uttama in the platform of bhava, and the uttama in the platform of prema. That the bhakta on the platform of as a madhyama, he's engaging his conditioned nature favorably without desire for gain or profit in Krishna's service. The bhava bhakta is engaging his spiritual form in Krishna's service favorably. And the prema bhakta then is situated in his, you know, fully manifested in his transcendental form, and that love has become matured. Like that. So we see that's why they're similar. Though definite stages. Well, the kanista is in another category. So that's from this definition. He's trying to point out what is pure devotional service. And that pure then will have three stages. The pure, and then the platform of bhava pure, and then the pure unalloyed is prema. While the kanista is materialistic. Like that. So that's why it's being put together in this form. So you basically have the kanista and then you have the other three. Another way to put it together is that you have sadhana bhakti, in it you have the kanista and the madhyam. And then bhava bhakti and prema bhakti, these are the two forms of the uttam. You know? So prema is what you're trying to get to, bhava is not quite there, but very close. And then sadhana is trying to perfect, to get to the platform of bhava, trying to liberate yourself. But of the two, one is considered materialistic and one is considered pure. Like that. So the madhyama then is... In other words, the madhyama cannot be... From this conversation we can see that a madhyama cannot be disregarded. This is the problem with the kanista. The kanista will see nitya siddhas as something special, and everybody else is, you know, just like them. Like that. So this is the problem. You know, is they're not able to distinguish within spiritual what is the variety, and then how it must be, you know, depending upon how much is manifest. Something's manifest, it's truth, it's sat, so it must be recognized. But they can only recognize it when it's on the platform of, you know, pure unalloyed devotional service. Though they'll say uttama. Uttama, freed from the material contamination. That simply means someone on the Brahma-Buddha platform. That's even a lower stage than someone necessarily on the platform of Siddhi. I've seen someone give a run of explanation of, you know, who should be worshipped. And they put together so many quotes on the uttam bhakta. Not even uttam bhakta, advanced devotee, like that. Some of them are madhyama descriptions, some of them are, he's fixed in devotional service, that means a madhyama. Or he has a taste for devotional service, so he's attached to devotional service. He's freed from material contamination. Now you've gotten to the border of asakti and bhava, or between the madhyama and the uttam. You know? Then he has attraction for Krishna, or attachment for Krishna. That can be then in the later stages of bhava. Can be above. He has love for Krishna. Then that is also can be in the platform of bhava. only he has actual, the pure unalloyed love, only that then you get into the platform of the Nityasuddha. So the advanced devotees, the pure devotees, are then described in all this. And we say one should approach a pure devotee. So here, pure starts from Madhyama. Because you won't find in our basically sampradaya, as such as the acharyas, anyone who's not acting on the Madhyama platform. They're not acting as uttamas. They're acting, their uttama is acting as Madhyamas. So therefore, for the one has to regard the Madhyama. Because even the uttamas will come as Madhyamas to preach. So if they're not regarded, then what's the use? What's the meaning? You know, it's like the liberated soul doesn't make mistakes. But sometimes there's discussion, a question, questioning Prabhupada's position and what he's done. You know, Prabhupada made a mistake with the Gurukuls, or Prabhupada made a mistake here, or Prabhupada made a mistake there. It's commonplace discussion nowadays. You know? You can talk about this, you know, the cricket match, you can talk about this, you can talk about, you know, anything.
Movies.
Huh?
Movies.
Movies, yeah. Like that. And, but here, the pure devotee never makes a mistake. Because mistake has nothing to do with material. Mistake means it's not in connection to Krishna. Like that. Material mistakes, everything, nothing is pure. Everything is, every action is covered by smoke. Right? Fire is covered by smoke. That's as good as you can get in the material world. You can't get material perfection. There is no material perfection. Pure material perfection absolutely does not exist. Because material nature is not absolute. If it contacts absolute, then it becomes perfect. So to use something in Krishna's service, that's perfection. So to expect material perfection from the pure devotee, and that's your judge how you're going to say this is pure, then this is what is called here the prakriti bhakta, the materialistic bhakta. He can't see spiritual. So such a discussion can only go on in that way. Right? Means if you're looking at it from that point, if you're not doubting Prabhupada's position and his perfection of what he's performed and why he's performed it, that's another thing. But you can't understand how the detail is being, why he's used that detail in that way, whether that would have been the best choice or not, because that's another thing. It means the pure devotee goes into the kitchen to cook. So the perfection is that whatever they do, they're doing it to please Krishna. Now, whether they've necessarily chosen the best pot or the best spoon, you know, or the specific spice or that, that's another thing. That's a detail. The principle is that what they've done is perfectly for Krishna. So you can't have, so within this one has to discriminate between those who are wondering if it was the best, but they understand Prabhupada's position is perfect. And there are those who doubt Prabhupada's perfection because they see materialistically it, they can't add it up. You know, why would Prabhupada introduce Gurukuls and they fail? You know, and then you say, well, it's not Prabhupada's fault. He had the perfect plan, and we're imperfect, and we're the ones trying to implement, so we made mistakes. Then it will be, but Prabhupada knew us, so why did he introduce that? But if he was going to take that principle, then he wouldn't let us touch anything. Right? Because we take the holy name, it's offensive, our chanting. We worship the deity, it's offensive. We deal with Vaishnavas, it's offensive. Everything we do is offensive. So if we took this to its nth degree, Prabhupada wouldn't even come to America. He wouldn't leave his bhajan and vrindavan bus, because anyone outside of basically himself and a few others are offensive. Or maybe they'll be intermediate devotees. You know, but they're there, they're in knowledge, they have samanda gyan, they're worshipping, they're in the association of devotees. There's no devotees in the matter. And they worship the deity in the association of devotees and have the proper knowledge. So that's going to be people sitting there. A few here and there. So therefore, it's simply a materialistic approach. So one has to be careful. But at the same time, one can't make the same mistake. One has to be able to distinguish between those who are doubting the principle and those who are unclear on the detail. That has to be seen. Yes. Oh. So the end of this is this. Okay. However, on the day that these qualities are manifested in his heart, such a person may be called an intermediate Madhyama devotee. That is how a materialistic devotee becomes an intermediate devotee. As long as these qualities do not arise in his heart, he is a materialistic devotee. This means he is considered only a shadow of a true devotee, or a shadow of a true Vaishnava. Here the word Krishnanushilanam refers to spiritual love, prema. However, the word anukulyena refers to all four qualities of an intermediate devotee: favorable love for Lord Krishna, friendship, mercy, and neglect. So all these are considered favorable service, Krishnanushilanam. Or anukulyena, yeah. So what's favorable? Anukulyena. So then all this is there. So it doesn't just mean that your offering was nice. It means that all this mood was there. This is what he's pointing out here. Yeah, so means when the devotee, when the neophyte starts to perform his activities without trying to do it, because he's doing the service, therefore God should reciprocate by giving him material benefit. Right? Or speculation that he's trying to liberate himself. Right? And that he's trying to do what Krishna likes with whatever he understands. At that point, the Kanista becomes a Madhyama. Very, very simple. So it's a matter of understanding, realization. And that's gained by good association, service, study. Like that. Is there anything else otherwise? It's okay, so we'll end here. We'll continue on Thursday.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda
Ki Jai
Jai Jai Gaura
Prema Ki Jai